Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, October 28th, 2014. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Alfred, good afternoon.
Well, Melody, how's the weather?
Warm.
I know.
Very warm here in central Pennsylvania.
It's warm in central Texas, too.
Yes, that was amazing.
What are the odds?
What are the odds? It means we'll probably have a foot of snow tomorrow, maybe.
Not here.
No?
It does not mean a foot of snow for Central Texas. I'm pretty sure of that.
Well, we'll have to see what we can do. You know, bring in those. We'll ask them to turn on those Harp fans and see what we can do.
Harp is an outdated technology. They're going to shut
much.
That down. They've got other things going.
Yeah.
Some people think the cell towers
right,
are now replacing HARP cell phone towers. I don't know what any of it means. I'm not advocating that myself, but
I do believe frequencies have it can change things. I think there's a lot of things that you add to the environments and it will change. It could change the weather. So you bring all these additional low frequencies or high frequencies or whatever frequency it is with, you know, very little understanding of frequencies, but it can make a difference. Just like the cities and the heat islands. There's so much cement and so forth that this heat just builds and builds, and they have said that it does change the weather patterns. So you put all that together along with even outdated HARP systems, and who knows what you can create.
I understand. We are, we're pushing the envelope, and we will continue to do so until there is a calamity. All right? As long as we got away with it up until now, well, let's push it some more. And then we'll push it some more and push it some more, and we will continue to do that until there is a calamity that perhaps affects the entire globe. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be people, well, we need to do this, that, and the other. They should be doing it now. They're not. It's unfortunate, but it appears to be human nature.
Yes, it does. And I guess it's just human nature to continue to put pressure on gold. Although we see it up $3 today at 12.29, still off the high of 12.36. Earlier in the day, silver's up 10 at 17.31, platinum up 10 1272, palladium up 9 at 796. And, you know, it's just one of those days. What are the odds? You know, silver and platinum. Silver, 10 cents. Platinum, $10. You know, that's my own personal conspiracy theory. Good. Guys are just sitting there typing and on the computer changing the numbers. Oh, it's got to be a little realistic so we can do this. It's got to match this report and that report. But, you know, let the computer do it. Yes, Al?
Oh, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. The numbers are random or I don't know how they're doing.
I don't know. Some of the numbers you do have to question. The USDX today is down 0.17 at 85.41. Crude oil up 30 at 81.30. And the paper markets today, after a huge increase in consumer confidence and durable goods numbers came out, but they weren't so hot. The Dow was up 187 points at 17,005. Back up over that level. The NASDAQ up 78 at 45.64. S&P up 23 at 1983. And the 10-year yield up 0.03 at 2.28%. And orders for durable goods today fell in September. And that has been the second month in a row. You know, demand is slacking off for, you know, the variety of products that fall into the durable goods, autos, computers, machinery, aircrafts. So you have a lot of volatility in the aircrafts and so forth. It was kind of a surprising decline in the final month of the third quarter from all of these financial analysts. They were quite analysts, they were quite surprised to see the decline in the final month. And of course, their question as to whether a slowdown in the global economy could cause the U.S. businesses to scale back their spending plans as 2014 draw to a close. Why don't they just listen to our program, Howie? I mean, it's like, we'll tell you what the numbers are going to be. All you have to do is tune in, and you won't be so surprised when the numbers are released. And we have to look at what the stronger dollar is producing. Exports could certainly take a hit if the dollar continues to strengthen. And that's another reason why, you know, you're only going to see the dollar increase to, you know, perhaps the level that we're seeing today. So the orders for durable goods declined by an adjusted 1.3%. And it was actually a negative. Let's see if I could see that. That was a seasonally adjusted, but orders was actually,
I've got an article here from Reuters, and they say
it was dipped by 0.7, 0.5, I also heard too.
1.7, okay, all right. Yeah. They say it's down by that. Yeah. They say it's the largest drop in 8 months.
Yep.
And these are capital goods, and the article I'm referring to, or I'm looking at, capital goods are durable goods that do not wear out quickly, that are used in the production of goods and services. Capital goods are one of the three types of producer goods, the other two being land and labor, which are also known collectively as primary factors of production. And the point I'm making here is that capital goods are what are used to produce products, goods and services for people.
But these products,
as far as they're backing off on capital goods, it implies that they don't expect much of a demand for more goods and services. That's the implication. People, they may be right, they might be wrong, but that's the implication. They're saying we don't need to buy any more durable goods or capital goods because we're not going to be making any more products in the next quarter or next year than we are right now. So perhaps that's part of the explanation for backing off. A moderation in home price gains in August, also reported on Tuesday, offered further suggestion the economy may have cooled a bit, although consumer confidence jumped to a 7-year high this month. Now, this is interesting to me because we've got an article that tells us that the demand for capital goods has fallen. The biggest drop in 8 months, and it's linked, the same article, says, but consumer confidence rises.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I look at this and I wonder, is this just a kind of coincidence? It's like saying, you know, somebody shot your dog, but you have won the lottery. All right, it's kind of trying to balance the bad news with some apparent good news, and the consumer confidence issue is interesting because that is at a seven-year peak. According to another article at MarketWatch, consumer confidence jumped to a seven-year peak, helped by growing belief that the job market and the likelihood that wage growth will come next. There's going to be an increase in wages. And the conference board said Tuesday that consumer confidence in October rose to a reading of 94.5, up from 89 in September. Economists polled by MarketWatch expected only 87.3. They expected the reading would be 87.3, and instead they got 94.5. Now, that's interesting to me because it raises a question. Do these economists know what they're talking about?
Nope.
How can they be that far wrong? We expected it to rise to 87.3, but in fact, it rose to 94.5. And the biggest jump in 7 years. And you have to wonder. Are the economists simply mistaken? Is the economy running in ways that they don't understand, can't predict? Or is somebody fixing the numbers in order to compensate for the idea that the purchase of capital goods is down? Right? I mean, my question is, are they manipulating the consumer confidence numbers in order to blunt the effect of the capital goods report?
With that number, the capital goods report coming out today, because that is the long-term items, and when you think of long-term items, you think of, you know, where it comes to consumers, and when you have an economy that's based on two-thirds consumer purchasing, refrigerators, washing machines, those types of purchases, and that is being down. So you would think, well, how good is it? What's the consumer confidence based on? What are they tagging it to? Is it seasonably adjusted? And what it is, they're tagging it to the lower gasoline prices. But really, gasoline prices, and the average gasoline price was like 3.07, and that only goes back to 2010. So if consumer confidence is up to 94 since 2007, right before the stuff hits the fan, and gasoline prices are only back to 2010, how do you get that consumer confidence that high just based on the lower price of gasoline? It doesn't cut it. And that was my big question. I agree with you. I think they needed a high stock market today. We go into the Federal Reserve meeting. Those numbers are going to be released tomorrow. And I guarantee you that the market will be being, it should be dumped tomorrow. This was a good field day.
Let me see if I understand what you mean. You expect that the Dow, for example, to take a significant decline tomorrow. Is that what you're saying?
Well, who knows? But it's, you know, over 100 points. It'll probably be. It should be. Because with the numbers today, with the durable goods, and even though the consumer confidence number is so high, as you said, as you pointed out, and I pointed out, it doesn't make sense. What do consumers have to feel good about? The stock market up over 17,000? It reversed itself? My gosh, look at the problems. I have also a report here. It's a poll. Let me see if I can bring it up here. 7 in 10 Americans are angry at the direction the country is headed.
Yeah, but so their confidence is increasing.
But their confidence is
70% of us are angry, but we're confident.
But we're confident in our anger.
That's right. There's nothing like an angry consumer to inspire confidence.
So, you know, unless the Fed comes out with something to really change, or maybe they come out and say they're going to continue the bond buying purchases, because they also had a bond auction today. I think it was the 2-year is what I saw. I didn't know if they had any other ones, but they had a hard time selling them. So they might continue with the bond purchase program. They might not end it this month. If they say something like that, then you could see the stock market go higher.
Well, there's one other event to factor into the equation, and that is there's an election next Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I would bet that everybody in Washington who is running for re-election, especially among the Democrats, want the most positive news they can churn out in order to tell the voters happy days are here again.
That will be the only thing that gets the Democrats reelected.
If any, well, you never know. Republicans may be so confident they don't even bother to show up to vote. It's hard to say what'll happen here, but
because that's
they're
all
vulnerable.
People
watch. And I'm saying I don't expect the Fed to make a move.
No,
that's likely to be received adversely by the markets. Right, whatever the Feds do, the market's going to go up from now until at least.
At least until next Wednesday.
After the polls close on Tuesday, I don't know what's going to happen after that, but I'm willing to bet that for the next few days, the confidence level is going up and the markets are going up and everything's going to go up.
I think you'll see a dip tomorrow and then it'll reverse itself for the election of next week.
Yeah.
So you couldn't have a bad day today. You had to have a good day today. For any bad news that's released tomorrow that everybody's waiting for for Yellen to make her statements, and which, I don't get. I mean, exactly what she's going to say. The only different thing that she could say is they're going to continue the bond purchasing. I mean, what else? She's going to say the same thing that she said since she's got in there. And so it shouldn't be any big surprises. So you might have a follow through with the report today being a little bit to the negative side. And but hey, you got rigged markets. You never know what to expect.
Well, it's like, I can't remember his name. Who's Tom Hanks? He played the guy who was mentally retarded in the movie back 10, 15 years ago anyway, maybe even 20. Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. It's the same thing with our economic indicators. Mm-hmm. And, it's like a box of chocolates. And I'm just sitting here with, makes us all feel a little retarded, I guess.
I mean, you have Europe that's ready to go into a recession. I mean, they're already there. It's just that the numbers they...
Well, we're already there.
Well, we've never came out of one. They just, rigged the numbers to make us look like out of the... there's so many quarters and so forth. Oh, you're in and out of a recession.
Just some of you individuals, you are still caught in a recession, but that's your fault. But the country, trust us, we've got the numbers to prove it. The rest of them are all doing fine. It's just you.
You know what, Al? What you mentioned earlier about when that one incident happens. They'll just keep pulling along. Everything just keeps going along until something happens that prevents it to go any further. And
we're getting closer to that moment. It's been surprising to me that they've been able to hold this thing together as long as they have. But I still don't believe they can hold it together indefinitely. I think the problems are too great to be overcome. And sooner or later, we're going to have that problem. When we do, paper debt instruments are going to turn out to be largely worthless, and those of you who are holding your wealth in form of something like gold or silver are going to be happy campers, because you will still have some wealth, while the people who have gravitated to paper have lost their assets. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
I'm Alfred Adams, Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just want to, we're going to do a 24-hour special. So when we start the program tomorrow, it's done. 24-hour special. You can purchase 1 ounce gold Eagle coins at $50 over spot. I don't think you can find that price any less anywhere else. Silver Eagles, $2.45 over spot. There's no minimums. You can buy as many as you want. $50 over spot. Normally, you're looking at about $65, so you're saving about $15 a coin for American Gold Eagles. 1 ounce. These are 1 ounce coins. And Silver Eagles, $2.45 over. You can buy one or a million. And the U.S. Mint, I saw for the Silver Eagles, I'll get the update on the numbers tomorrow of Silver Eagles thus far. For this month of October, it did bump over 4 million. So, and Gold Eagles, I believe, were 55,000 to 58,000. So, we'll get the final numbers up to this month so far. And give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. That's a heck of a deal, Al.
Such a deal. Does that include shipping?
Depends on how many. If you purchase like 20 Gold Eagles, we'll include shipping. But if you just buy one, we'll have a small price for shipping. So let us know once we know how many you're looking to purchase.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I got an article here from a man named Dennis Gartman. The article's in Business Insider. Dennis Gartman, publisher of the Gartman newsletter. He said on Monday that crude oil prices will fall demonstrably from current levels. Earlier on Monday, It had been reported that Gartman saw crude oil going to $10 a barrel, which, of course, is ridiculous. He was half joking when he made that comment, and he's backed off on that claim. But nevertheless, the central spirit of Gartman's not quite $10 call was still intact, with Gartman saying simply that the era of oil is over. All right? Now, he's anticipating that supply of oil is going to continue to grow more quickly than demand, and therefore the prices are going to continue to fall. Nobody believes it's going to fall $10 a barrel. Nobody believes that. But in discussing the end of oil, Gartman referenced news from Lockheed Martin earlier this month. Lockheed has made a technological breakthrough in developing a power source based on nuclear fusion. Not fission, fusion. A lot of people, you may have heard of this for sometime. People have been looking for a way to harness the power of nuclear fusion because it's not going to generate any harmful radiation and it's not going to generate any harmful byproducts. I think the byproducts are hydrogen, helium. I'm not sure. I'm not even close to imagining that I'm a physicist. But nevertheless, this has been the goal of people around the energy community for some time. Lockheed says maybe they've had a breakthrough. Some people are suspicious and wary, but Gartman sees the potential in this breakthrough as being something of a death knell for oil. All right? So he's not anticipating that crude oil, the need, demand, and the price is going to disappear within the next weeks, months, or even few years, but he's saying maybe we've seen the peak in our need for petroleum products, at least to provide energy. I expect we're going to use petroleum products to generate lubricants for a long time. But he thinks maybe the technology is going to put oil back.
Well, he's talking just about a power source. But they use crude oil. They use oil, and it's such a byproduct.
Well, they make plastics and lubricants and all kinds of things.
I mean, from aspirins to Jell-O, I mean, almost every product that exists has oil as a byproduct. So certainly unless demand lessens for all these products, and certainly you see all these countries who have fiat currencies, fiat currencies mean weaker currencies, which means more of those currencies to buy more of the items. So
it means higher prices.
Higher prices. So
now, that's what it should mean when we have fiat currencies, depending on how the economy is functioning.
But that doesn't mean on a day-to-day basis. I'm talking over a period of time. You're going to see prices increase.
Well, probably. But
no, not a problem.
We do have the situation with the fracking, extracting oil that they didn't know they could access 10 years ago. Now they've taken quite a lot. How long that's going to last remains to be seen, but it's affected the U.S. oil market, and they will undoubtedly develop the fracking technology for other places around the world. I'm going to guess there's going to be another 10, 15 years when we have more oil than we have demand. And under those circumstances, the price of oil might be expected to continue to drop. There's an article from CNBC. This is perhaps part of the reason for consumer confidence. If oil drops to $70 a barrel, now this other guy, Hartman, is making a half-joking prediction of $10. But people believe that the price of oil is going to continue to fall. Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong, but there is some consensus to that idea. And CNBC says if oil drops to $70 a barrel, what will gas cost? Usually bullish Goldman Sachs is changing its tune about oil. The widely followed investment bank is now predicting oil prices will fall another $10, ultimately dropping to $70 a barrel in 2015. Largely, Goldman believes rising production will outpace demand. On CNBC's Closing Bell, Stephen Schork of the Schork Report said if oil drops to $80, it translates to $2.95 per gallon gasoline. Price of your gasoline on average should fall below $3. If oil drops to $75, it means you'll pay $2.80 at the pump per gallon of gasoline. And if oil goes to $70, drivers are looking at $2.60 per gallon. So, I don't know. I mean, I guarantee there'd be a lot of people who'd say, yippee. You know, and those prices are, we can sit back and say that a $70 barrel oil is possible. I don't know that that's going to happen, but we can certainly say that it's possible.
You know what irritates me, Al?
Hmm.
Is that all of these markets are so rigged. The only reason, well, there's several reasons, but one of them that I believe is they need that consumer out there buying, and this is freeing up money so the consumer can go out and buy and maybe can become more wealthy. And our gasoline prices should be a lot lower than $2.60 at $70 a barrel. It should be a lot lower.
I'd say
and,
so, too.
So, you know, it's just another manipulated market. You don't even know what makes these markets move anymore. You know, is it the Saudis that, trying to get back at the U.S. for producing oil and hurting their supply? Is it to get even with Russia? Or is the price of oil going down because no one is, the petrodollar is losing its value? So,
it should be going up if the petrodollar is losing its value. Price, that would be consistent with prices going up.
Is it separate? No, it's separating. It's separating the position from the dollar. Showing more proof that, the connection is being split. It doesn't have that power anymore. So you're seeing the dollar go in one direction and oil going in a different direction. So, again, it comes back to, these markets are all rigged. You have to go back to the fundamentals and look to see what the true fundamentals are all about, and that these are just, all symptoms.
They're symptoms of greed and symptoms of control and symptoms of a system that is global in nature.
Yes.
And the system is fiat currency.
Fiat currency.
Virtually every country on earth has a fiat currency. There's a couple of exceptions, so far as I know, that are their currency is backed by gold. Iraq had that. Until we invaded and gave them the benefit of green pieces of paper that have no intrinsic value. They actually had gold-based currency. It may be that Iran does. I don't know if that's true or false. But there were only a couple of nations in the world that said they were, not powerful, not nations that come to mind immediately in the rest. But we have engaged in this fiat currency experiment, and it's promoted as if it's a good idea when it starts out and say, oh, we have all this extra power and control and we can fine-tune the economy and make it go a little faster and make sure we don't have any depressions or recessions, and they've got all these wonderful ideas. But the problem is that no one can resist the temptation to use fiat currencies to generate the kind of economy that will get incumbent politicians reelected. We can sit back and come up and we can say we have a new technology that will benefit everyone. But in the end, instead of benefiting everyone, it can be used to benefit a relatively few, a small elite. They will prosper. The majority will suffer losses and generally won't even realize those losses. For example, I had somebody write to me about he doesn't understand inflation. Right? And he doesn't understand. He'd read some articles that I'd written about inflation, deflation, one thing, another. And he says, he doesn't understand why it makes any difference. I said, let's imagine that your grandfather, back about 1970, put $250,000 in a trust fund that he earmarked for his favorite grandson, and that was this guy that had written to me. I says, he's put that away, but he conditioned it. He said, you're not going to be able to open it, you're not going to be able to get the money out of the trust fund until 2015. Next year, right? So come 2015, you're going to be able to open the trust fund and you'll get $250,000, which is enough to buy a new house. Median price of homes right now is about $225,000, $230,000. You could buy a new house for the $250,000. Yippee! Hooray for Grandpa. He put away $250,000 in a trust and he left it where it would come to you in 2015. That sounds great. But when you consider inflation back in 1970, when Grandpa put that $250,000 into the trust fund, the median price of homes was about $25,000. He put enough money into that trust fund to buy 10 houses at prices that existed back in 1970. If you had received the money at that time, you would have had enough money to buy one house free and clear that you would own and you could live in without having to pay any more money on your mortgage. You would also receive 9 additional homes that you own free and clear that you could rent out. And you collect all of the money that's being paid as rent. You're not just taking a percentage of it while you're paying the mortgage. You owe these houses free and clear. You can imagine that if you own 9 houses free and clear and another one where you didn't have to live in and you didn't have to pay the mortgage, you could live pretty decently. Right? Grandpa put enough money in the trust fund for you to have 10 houses free and clear. But when you open it up, thanks to inflation, when you finally get the $250,000 in 2015, you'll be only able to buy one house. And this is what happens with this inflation. You have been robbed. Grandpa has been robbed. He put enough money in the box or in the trust fund for you to get 10 houses. You got one house. Well, you know, you can be hooray for Grandpa, hooray for getting one house. But you could have had 10. And that's what happens with inflation. You get robbed and you don't even know it. The average person has no concept of what's taking place, that he's being robbed, he's being diminished. And I don't know.
People have a tendency to look inflation as a good part of inflation, where there's a lot of demand, a lot of spending, and the price just naturally rises. Mm-hmm. That's not the inflation that's occurring. Many people think it is, and that's how prices are, my home price is going up. I got value in my home. No, you got inflation in your home.
Mm-hmm.
It's not value, it's inflation. Yeah,
it creates an illusion that we succumb to. Say, hey, I bought that thing and it cost me $100,000. Now I can sell it for $200,000. I made $100,000. Yeah, but during that time, the value of the dollar has fallen by 80%, and you have lost. You haven't gained. You've lost. And very few people. I don't know how many people understand it. I think everyone dimly understands it, or most people dimly understand inflation. But as long as it's not sudden and immediate, they don't mind being robbed moderately by the government.
They don't understand that inflation is monetary policy created.
Yeah.
They understand prices get more expensive, more expensive, more expensive, but they don't. I don't believe the majority of people relate it to the government as monetary policy. It's something that they create, and they've created it for so many years, and it allows the government to continue to grow and to support all these programs that we have. That's why your everyday items continue mm-hmm. to rise and go up.
Yeah.
They can't make the connection to inflation is being created by government instead of inflation being created by demand, if that makes
sense. It makes sense from this perspective. If it was created by demand, it would be innocent inflation. All right. You could sit back and say, well, it's just the way the market. When it's created by government, it's intentional. They are robbing you. They're diminishing your standard of living. They're doing it intentionally, and they're getting away with it because the vast majority of us don't have a clue to what's going on. Let's take a break for some more commercials. Be right back. I'm Alfred Addis with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, Financial Survival, Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
You begin to talk like a Pennsylvanian.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Bob in Iowa says he pays $2.87 for gasoline this morning in eastern Iowa, but here in State College, Pennsylvania, it's still over $3. Close, it's still above $3. So, again, I guess it depends on where you live.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
That makes a difference.
Absolutely. If you live in Europe, I have no idea what they're paying over there, but I'll bet you it's a lot higher than what we are. It always has been. I mean,
they 15, 20 years ago,
I think they were paying $7, $8 a gallon.
Yeah, but they get to retire at 55.
They think they do.
They get to
jump off the cliff at 55 is what's going to happen. They're going to be running like lemmings going over the cliff when they find out what's really going on with their economy and their pension plans and their willingness to trust in fiat currencies and paper debt instruments. You know, this goes to the idea of whether, you know, we talk about this on a fairly regular basis, but it's still important to grasp and keep, and from my perspective, to keep at the forefront of your understanding. There, for every debt, there is a correlative paper debt instrument that someone treats as an asset. If somebody borrows $100,000, if the government borrows $100,000, they issue a piece of paper that says, we promise to repay $100,000. Somebody signs the piece of paper and they put a stamp on it and a seal and the rest of that, and it looks very efficient. Someone is holding that piece of paper, and in the debt-based monetary system, they're allowed to treat that piece of paper as if it's an asset. But it's not. It's only a promise to pay. It's not really an asset. An asset is something that has intrinsic value, or at least as I look at it. An asset is a payment. All of your pieces of paper are just promises to pay in a world where the vast majority of the promises can't possibly be kept. And it means that those of us that are hanging on to paper debt instruments are taking considerable risk. And it tells me, and it's again the reason I do these programs more than anything else. It's the reason I believe in the gold. It's not because I'm fascinated by gold because it's shiny and metallic and heavy and so on, the rest of that. That's not the point. The point is that it's an alternative to paper debt instruments like fiat dollars. Huh? And if you're going to store your wealth in fiat dollars, you are running an extraordinary risk. It's like keeping your wealth in a form of currency that is flammable. Huh? It's not really your best choice. Stuff could burn up at any moment. The gold will survive. The fiat currency will not. We don't know when that fiat currency is going to go down. It could happen at any time, but it might not happen for a couple more years. No one really knows. But still, that is the foundation for my recommendation. Look, put whatever you can into gold and hang on tight.
I agree.
Well, you'd better. Better we'll talk to the boss.
And yeah, let's get that boss.
I'll tell the boss if you disagree, Melody, and then you'll be in trouble.
Ruby.
Ruby? Ruby's the boss?
Ruby's the boss.
Well, I'm not going to get any deeper into that right now. Here's an article from Reuters. Australia issues blanket visa ban on Ebola-hit countries. Australia came under fire Tuesday from health experts and rights advocates after it issued a blanket ban on visas from West African nations affected by the Ebola breakout, making it the first rich nation to shut its doors to the region. Australia has not recorded a case of Ebola despite a number of scares, and Conservative Prime Minister Tony Abbott has so far resisted repeated requests to send medical personnel to help battle the outbreak on the ground. I only point to this as, look, I think he's doing the right thing. He's protecting his country. It may be that he's overreacting to whatever's going on with Ebola. We don't know we can't seem to get straight information. They started out saying, oh my gosh, the sky is falling and Ebola is going to kill us all. And now it's kind of petered out. But just the same. Until we really understand the extent of the threat, it's reasonable. It's patriotic. It's doing his job to shut the door and say, why take a chance? This stuff is that lethal. Let's not let it into our country. Someone in our country ought to be as sensible, in my opinion.
The only reason that the information on the Ebola is being petered out is because of the election. You know, they certainly don't want to see the incompetence that's coming out of the White House and the Democrats. And this morning there was a Republican congressman that is claiming that the Obama administration is trying to, or at least is exploring plans to bring non-U.S. citizens that are infected with Ebola to the United States for treatment.
Well, he can go to hell as far as I'm concerned. We don't need him in this country. If let the doctors, anybody wants to treat him, go to Africa and treat them there in their home country and stay there until the disease is eradicated. Don't go over there and then think you can hop back on weekends, you know, to see the wife and kids and the rest of that sort of thing. Go stay when the problem is resolved. And if you're sure you people that are you humanitarians aren't carrying the disease, all right, come on home.
Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee told Fox News that his office has received information from within the administration that these plans are being developed. So far, only American Ebola patients, of course, have been brought back. Goodlatte out of Virginia warned that expanding that policy, of course, would put the country at more risk. He says they have tried to receive confirmation, but he says members of the media, his office, has received confidential communications saying that those plans are being developed.
I think that's crazy. It's hard to imagine that Obama is nutty enough to do that. You know,
I don't know. He's just really gung-ho. My question is, why is he so gung-ho all of a sudden about taking care? And yes, you know, people want to go over there and help these people. God bless them. You know, don't get me wrong. But I don't ever recall someone or the White House and an administration that has focused sending troops when there's a health issue going on.
Yeah, I know.
They're not, as far as my understanding, they're not supposed to.
Crazy. crazy. What's
so
this
for
got
some
to do?
Reason?
What are they going to do? Shoot the virus? Send over several hundred or several thousand soldiers, and we can shoot the virus anytime we see one? This is nutty.
So why is he so gung ho on this?
I don't know. You know, maybe it's because people allege he came from Kenya in the first place. Maybe he's just sensitive to the idea of helping African nations more so than we might expect, certainly from a president of the United States. It's all right, you want to help other countries? Fine. You want to put this country in jeopardy? Wrong. Can't be that way. Shouldn't be that way. And yet we seem to see that on a fairly regular basis from our president and our Congress and our Senate. They're marching to the beat of a different drummer, a global government, perhaps, rather than a government of the United States of America. Oh.
So, and a lot of this is going to be put the back burner until after the election.
Oh, I understand.
Speaking of the election, here you have Biden. He's out there campaigning. And, you know, every time he opens his mouth, something interesting comes out. But he's out there talking about they need to stop the march of the Tea Party now. What a threat it is to...
Democrats,
you know, yeah,
collectivists,
yep,
communists, socialists, Tea Party, standing up against communism, collectivism. You know,
yeah,
what a danger!
What a
I
danger.
Know, it's just crazy. More, it's evidence of the polarization that's taking place in the nation. That's one thing. I mean, both sides, in a sense, are looking at the other, not as the faithful. You know, opposition, per se. We are increasingly polarized, and we don't really get along. We all agree that the other guys are crazy. We're right, and they're 100% wrong. In fact, they might even be 100% evil. Well, what I'm trying to get across is that this level of polarization indicates that something's wrong. We're not all marching to the beat of the same drummer. There are divisions and schisms in this country that aren't going to be easily, you know, papered over. Maybe they'll just disappear. Who knows? Maybe we're all going to sing Kumbaya starting after the election, but I don't think so. I think we see fundamental problems, and they have that taking place in Europe right now. There are divisions between Germany, for example, which works hard and behaves responsibly and they are productive, and France, Italy, Greece, who are less responsible. Germany says, you guys need to be responsible, and these other nations say, no, we want a party. We want to shop till we drop, and we want you to give us some money that we haven't earned so we can go shopping and partying. And Germany is saying, look, pay for your own party. Be personally responsible. These other nations are criticizing Germany for austerity. And all they mean by austerity is personal responsibility. Every individual should pay his own bills. Every generation should pay its own bills. Every nation should pay its own bills. You should live within your means. That's what some people are calling austerity. We have a growing division between those elements in Europe and also in this country that are productive, that are actually generating more than they consume, and another side that are essentially debtors, borrowers, who consume more than they produce. We talk about it. We say, oh, we have a consumer economy, as if that's something to brag about. It can't work. Right? It can't last. It can't hold together where we focus on consuming things rather than producing things. And sooner or later, we are going to face that reality. And when we do, there are going to be people who are going to be screaming that they're entitled as consumers. They're entitled to welfare and subsidies, and they're Americans, and they can shop till they drop and let somebody else pay for it. And somebody else isn't going to pay for it. And when that entitlement mentality begins to break down, there's going to be hell to pay in this country. There are going to be significant problems. And to me, this is part of, this may be central to the divisions that are appearing in Europe and to the polarization that's appearing here in the United States. That people who actually work for a living versus people who vote for a living. In the end, we need the people that work for a living. We don't need the people who just vote for a living. We say, I'll vote for that congressman over there because he promises to give me something for nothing. It can't continue. It may be able to continue for a couple more years. I don't mean that it's going to end, in the next 60 days or something like that. But it can't. That mindset cannot continue. We can't have an economy that's based on 70% consumption. It simply can't continue. It's like saying we're on a farm and we eat 70%. Well, we eat 20% more than we produce. Right? We produce enough. We produce 50%, but we consume 70%. If that makes any sense, it doesn't. But I'm not expressing it clearly. But still, that's the point. You can't consume more than you produce, at least not for long. I know that some of us do and some of us get away with it, but in the end, that system is headed for a collapse. And I think they're seeing it in Europe, and I think we're also seeing it in polarization in this country. And if I'm right about that, there's going to be a significant conflict. The producers can't continue to carry all the consumers. And the consumers may not even remember how to work. We're coming to a moment when the consumers are going to have to either start working or start starving. Huh? It's not right around the corner, but we're headed in that direction, and they aren't going to like it. Cities are going to be torn up, burnt. No telling what will happen here. But reality is, if you want to eat, you got to grow some food. If you want to survive, you want to have a car, you have to have a job where you can afford to pay for a car. You can't just make it on welfare for the poor and subsidies for the rich. That whole business of government providing for everyone, it's going to fail, and we're going to all live, and most of us are going to live to see it. It's not that far away. It might be a couple of years, but it's going to fail. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all.
Money, money.